The first reading is Mark chapter 15, verses 1 to 15. Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin made their plans. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "You have said so," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now it was the custom at the festival to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists, who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. "Do you want me to release you, the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him!" Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified.
The next reading is from Mark 15, verses 16 to 32. The soldiers led Jesus away into the palace, that is, the praetorium, and called together the whole company of soldiers. They put a purple robe on him, then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him. And they began to call out to him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" Again and again they struck him on the head with a staff and spit on him. Falling on their knees, they paid homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him. A certain man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way in from the country, and they forced him to carry the cross. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. It was 9 in the morning when they crucified him. The written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified two rebels with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross, that we may see and believe." Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him.
This is Mark 15, verses 33 to 41. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing near heard this, they said, "Listen, he's calling Elijah." Someone ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down," he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God." Some women were watching from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James, the younger, and of Joseph, and Salome. In Galilee, these women had followed him and cared for his needs. Many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem were also there.
Our fourth reading is from Mark chapter 15, verses 42 to 47. It was preparation day, that is, the day before the Sabbath. So as evening approached, Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent member of the council who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, went boldly to Pilate and asked for Jesus' body. Pilate was surprised to hear that he was already dead. Summoning the centurion, he asked him if Jesus had already died. When he learned from the centurion that it was so, he gave the body to Joseph. So Joseph bought some linen cloth, took down the body, wrapped it in the linen, and placed it in a tomb cut out of rock. Then he rolled a stone against the entrance of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where he was laid.
Let's imagine the scene if we can. It's very early in the morning, no later than 6 o'clock. Jesus is bound and brought before Pilate. It's the start of his working day. Now, the Jewish leaders want Jesus dead. They know that Pilate won't execute someone on grounds of blasphemy, so they accuse him of treason. This man claims to be king of the Jews, they say. As far as Pilate's concerned, there's only one king of the Jews, and that's Tiberius, the emperor. Anyone else who claims to be king is a pretender and is to be executed. It's a serious charge. So he asked Jesus direct, "Are you the king of the Jews?" But Jesus neither confirms it nor refutes it. Literally, he replies with two words, "You say," and then is silent. The chief priests weigh in with more charges, more accusations, but Jesus still doesn't say a word. Pilate urges him to answer the charges against him, to defend himself, but Jesus, calm and dignified, says nothing. Pilate is amazed. And he's not naive. He knows that the charges against this man are groundless. This is an innocent man. Yet he won't defend himself. He could be freed if only he would defend himself. But he refuses to say anything. It's as though he wants to die. Pilate has no choice, it seems, but to condemn him. But there's just one more thing he can do. And his thoughts turn to Barabbas. Well, we know very little about Barabbas beyond what Mark tells us. He was being held in prison. He had led a revolt against the Romans. He had committed murder. He was a violent man, a killer. That's all we know about him. But with that little bit of information, try now, if you can, to put yourself in his shoes. Try and see this through his eyes. You're sitting in a Roman jail. You know what the law demands, you'll be executed. Crucifixion was reserved for criminals just like you, insurrectionists and murderers. And you also know deep down that you deserve it. It's a horrible way to die, and though you try, you can't get it out of your mind. You anticipate the agony of nails being hammered through your wrists, the excruciating pain as you're pulled up onto the cross, the humiliation as passers-by mock and laugh and scoff. You know that you'll have to fight for every breath until your strength gives out. The dreadful thirst, your legs being broken. That's your future. You don't know when it will come, but you know that it is coming. And then you hear the noise of a crowd chanting. You listen carefully. What is it they're shouting? You hear your name, Barabbas, Barabbas. And that's followed by a different chant. Crucify him, crucify him. A shiver runs down your spine. It seems your wait won't last much longer. Before long, there's the sound of keys rattling in the lock of your prison door. Guards enter the room. They grab you and drag you out in front of the angry crowd. Your heart's pounding, and you feel your legs trembling. You know what comes next. But then, to your astonishment, they give you a shove and growl at you that you're free to go. What is this? Well, as you stand there trying to make sense of it all, you see another man being led away to be flogged and executed. You ask someone what's going on. You discover that he's the one the crowd had been shouting for. Pilate had given them a choice. They could choose one prisoner to set free. You're told that Pilate had wanted to release the other man. He'd found no charges against him. He was an innocent man. But the priests had wanted you to be released instead. And the crowd had gone along with it. Their shouts of crucify had been for him, not for you. The magnitude of what's happening begins to dawn on you. An exchange has taken place. He's innocent and you're guilty. Yet he's getting the punishment you deserve and you're going free. He dies while you get to live. Well, those are historical details, yet they provide a dramatic picture of what Jesus has done for his people at the cross. He has taken the penalty that our sin deserves. And sin is no small matter. The evil that we see in the world around us is serious. Murder, rape, genocide, greed, the arrogance of the rich and powerful, thousands upon thousands suffering the horrors of war and exploitation. A holy God cannot simply overlook such evil. It rightly deserves his condemnation. And we would be up in arms if it were otherwise. If God overlooked evil, what kind of God would he be? And our sin is no less serious. The things we do and say in the privacy of our own homes and at work, and when we think no one is watching. Our desire to silence God's voice and to live as we please, doing the very things that he condemns. It all matters to God. The world lives under his condemnation. And the Bible tells us that the punishment for sin, for all sin, is death. Not only physical death, but spiritual death, eternal death. We each have a death sentence hanging over us. Yet Jesus Christ goes willingly and deliberately to his death to take sin's punishment for all his people in their place. Well, that explains what happens in verse 33 onwards, as Jesus hangs dying on the cross. We're told at the sixth hour, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon, until the ninth hour. Well, this isn't an eclipse. This darkness is a sign of God's anger at sin. Jesus cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He is the one on whom God's anger falls. In verse 37, we're told, with a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. He dies the death that his people deserve. And then we're told, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Well, that might seem like an odd detail, but it is hugely significant. The place in the temple where God was believed to be present was called the Holy of Holies. And in front of that place was a huge, thick curtain beyond which no one could pass. It was like a big no-entry sign. And the message was clear. Sinful men and women cannot enter God's presence. The way is barred. We are shut out because of our sin. Sin destroys our relationship with God and brings us under his condemnation. It is not safe to enter God's presence. But as Jesus dies, Mark transports us from the cross outside the city to the temple within. And the curtain, that big no-entry sign, barring entry into God's presence, is torn in two from top to bottom. Because of Jesus, the way into God's presence is open again. A great exchange has taken place. He's innocent. You and I are guilty. Yet Jesus is forsaken by his Father so that all who belong to him can be welcomed as sons and daughters. He is punished in the place of his people so that they can be forgiven. He dies so that all who trust in him can live. That's why today is called Good Friday. Today, as Christians, we delight in all that Jesus has done for us. We delight in the love he's shown us. We delight in the salvation that he has secured for us at the cross through the forgiveness of sin. And we remember the great price he paid so that we, like Barabbas, might live. Well, our right response to all of this must be to give our allegiance fully to him. Well, let's pause for a moment of reflection, a moment of silence, to think about the passages we've read, to think about what they mean, to think about all that Jesus has done for us at the cross. A moment of silence.
Of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom.